growth is amazing, but it's a double-edged sword. Like, everyone wants growth. I get it, but it can be tough in an organization. And so I think get a lot of the fundamentals in place, like such as your company values and like what you believe in. Like, sometimes people think that stuff's a bit fluffy, but really, really helps you when you grow rapidly is like understanding why does your company exist other than to make money, you know? And I think so getting your values nailed.
Hello and welcome to This Is HCD. My name is Jerry Scullion and I'm a designer, educator and the host of This Is HCD based in the wonderful city of Dublin, Ireland. Now, our goal here is to have conversations that inspire and help move the dial forward for organisations to become more human-centred in their approach to solving complex business and societal problems. Now, I recently caught up for coffee with John Collins, also based in Dublin, and the former director of content for Intercom, and is now an independent consultant working in content marketing for businesses around the world. In this conversation, we chat about the role of content marketing versus product marketing. We chat about the massive growth of Intercom over the 7 years that John was there. I actually put John on the spot, and you're very welcome, John, and asked him for 5 key learnings during this period, and also the things that they did that led to the business to generating over a quarter of a million business leads in that time. That's pretty cool. Now, before we jump in, I'd love it if you could help me out a little bit. If you could leave a review for the podcast wherever you listen to the podcast. It only takes a couple of minutes, folks, but it really, really helps our growth, helps new listeners, and helps the findability of the podcast. Those algorithms on Spotify and Google and Apple truly love your input. Now, you can go one better, of course, and become a patron of the podcast, and you can get an ad-free stream of this podcast for as little as €1.66 per month. You get a shout out as well as thanks on the podcast. Now, there are other plans there where you can get a super cool hoodie that I have. I'm wearing it right now at the moment with a Design for Humans logo that's nicely embroidered. And all the money goes directly to editing, hosting and maintaining our website, which, as you've probably heard before, is now a repository for human-centered design goodness with over 220 episodes, folks. So please do your bit and try and help us. Let's jump straight into this episode. It's a really good one. John is an epic guest and I know you're going to enjoy it. John Collins, a very warm welcome to This Is HCD. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Jerry. Thanks for having me.
No worries. We're almost neighbours in Dublin City and we're just after having a whole kind of bout of technology problems trying to connect, which is kind of ironic when we probably could have just met up for a coffee.
And we're on Zoom calls to the US and the UK and all sorts of places nonstop. But yeah, we try and do a call with someone down the road and
I know.
Technology doesn't play ball.
It is kind of crazy. And like technology, you've been involved in technology for the last, 15, 20 years, probably. And I'm looking at your LinkedIn here as well. But we'll get to some of that stuff. How do you describe what you do, John?
Oh, that's a tough one. I mean, make it simple for people. I mean, I kind of say, listen, I've done a lot of content marketing and communications, but really what I talk about is, it's really like building community. It's anything that's like organic, top of funnel. Get people aware of your company, get people interested in your company. But I think a big thing, and I think like what we've talked about before, is making sure that the experience that you have with marketing is also very similar to the experience you have in the product. I've always worked with very product-driven companies and like a lot of product-led growth. And I think, not least because it makes your job so much easier as a marketer to work with a great product rather than, I think we see some organizations are very sales-led or very marketing-led. I think if you're doing marketing where you've got a really strong product, it just makes your life so much easier.
Absolutely. And it's funny because in the world of service design that I primarily position myself in, you might have cut out there a little bit, John. In the world of service design that I'm involved in anyway, we often talk about the pre-service experience and the service experience and how mm-hmm. that will ultimately affect the post-service experience if the pre-service experience is setting up an over-expectancy. So your role as director of content in Intercom in Ireland is probably a really good one to talk a little bit about, because the product that in my mind when you were speaking there, you know, that's Intercom. Okay, Intercom's regarded as being one of the poster boys, so to speak, of tech in Ireland. When you joined Intercom, you were they were probably 2.5-3 years into their journey in 2014. Walk me through what that was like in terms of the product at that stage, and also your role, what you were doing with them.
Yeah, so I mean, it was kind of an interesting one because I had, you know, I worked in tech briefly during the first .com go around, you know, but then I'd worked as a journalist after that, and like always very interested in technology and business, and you know, had a lot of contacts in the industry, and obviously the media world was not a great place to be in 2014, and so Intercom Owen, the CEO at Intercom, was one of the first people I kind of got in touch with, and was like, hey, look, I'm looking to make a change, and you know, I see you guys raise money, you know, surely you're just going to start doing some PR or look for, you know, someone to do comms, which was kind of the standard way that like people got out of journalism. But actually Owen and his co-founder Des very much had a vision of what content could be and how content marketing could really help Intercom grow. And I think it was like very different to a lot of what was around at the time, which was very much about SEO and about like churning out lots and lots of articles, you know, which were like on the face of it, pretty good articles. But like I always say, they're like kind of, you kind of have that Happy Meal effect with a lot of SEO content in that, you know, you like, it looks good, you eat it, you feel full, but then like half an hour later, you realize you're still hungry. Yeah. And so what we did was wanted to create something that, you know, would be much more about building the brand, but also, as I said, would reflect, you know, the experience people are going to have right throughout like their time with Intercom. Like we always said, you know, it was really important to sort of see the world through the lens of your product. So you know, we would talk about, it's not that you would talk about like what the product, like how to use the product, but you do talk about like sort of the universe the product plays in and see that through the lens of your product. So I'll give you an example. Intercom had a customer engagement kind of platform which, you know, allowed you to message your customers, but like in the product, and like, you know, this had been written in software, was like, you know, it was almost impossible to send a message to the same message to all your customers all the time. Like you had to choose filters for your message, because like any message that you send to everyone is probably quite like, it's a spam message, really. You know, messages should be targeted and directed at people. So like that was something that they'd written in the software, and like that's what we wrote about in the content, you know, like how to target messages, how to write a good message, how, like, what are the different kind of, like, you know, and this was content that you could get value, even if you used one of our competitors, you know, you could potentially get value out of it, but like the philosophy in that content was very much the philosophy of the product. And I think that's why it works, because it wasn't doing a hard sell, but it was making it very clear, like, why would you choose a product like Intercom?
Yeah. And I remember at that stage, it was, not coming across as the hard sell was the big thing. I was in Australia at the time, and I remember a wave of people talking about Intercom had this blog, and I was like, why are they writing a blog? Like, you know, and then when we looked at it, there was some fantastic articles up there that resonated with service designers and user experience designers and people that were working within SaaS businesses and consultancies and stuff like that. And they started to talk about it, and it started to build the brand. But I guess when you're at that stage of growth, was there resistance in the business to take this step, or was it something that you all bought into quite quickly?
I think the massive advantage I had was that like this came from the top. Yeah. You know, like Owen really believed in it. But like not only that, but Des actually walks the walk. The first 93 of 100 blog posts written on Inside Intercom were by Des. I mean, literally, I remember meeting him for a coffee between the time I signed my contract and actually started. And he was like, I can't wait for you to join. There's so much, you know, like I want you to take off my plate. But like he literally had it set up so that there was like an RSS feed from the blog to like an email marketing program, campaign monitor, or whatever it was at the time, where it literally was sending out the new blog post for the week every Wednesday at 5:30, which meant he basically had to write, someone had to produce a blog post every week, or that email was going out empty. And like there was that forced discipline of like, we're going to create content. But it's an interesting one, because I think like, you know, content marketing is, it's just become this thing that like every company wants to do out of the blocks. But you know, somehow there's sometimes going to be this reluctance to invest in it, or it's like we'll hire a junior person, or you know, like it's not maybe seen as sort of something you need to invest as much in as other parts of marketing. And I think that's a real loss. And I think actually, you know, we're kind of at an age now where it's like, actually don't bother doing content if you're not going to do quality content or stand out in some way, because it's just so much bad content out there. You know, it's so much Me Too kind of content.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's a big issue I see, particularly now that I'm kind of consulting with clients and stuff. And, you know, I think people are like, you know, we want to tick this box sometimes, but they don't necessarily want to like invest in it or have an opinion or really sort of, I suppose, like try and reflect their brand, you know?
Yeah.
They just want to,
Can you remember at that stage, and it's, I'm hopefully you're going to be able to share some of this stuff, but how did you measure success?
So I think in the early days, it was really just, in the first year, probably it was really just to see like, you know, as I say, I've been kind of like the founders kind of driving this. I mean, they come from that, like not to date ourselves too much, but that kind of web 2.0 world where, you know, everyone was having meetups and, you know, everyone was blogging and all that kind of stuff. So they very naturally sort of like, you know, told their story as the company grew. And it was really like to see, could we bring in like someone like me, like a more professional editor, you know, to actually sort of scale that operation. And so like, you know, I've worked with people who are very data driven and really want to like, we need to like measure everything within an inch of its life. But I always say like, listen, in the first 6 months, at least of a content marketing program, you should just know this is working. Like if you are, you know, starting to publish stuff, if you're not hearing feedback, like either on social where you're seeing people sharing your posts or like you're going to trade shows and people are actually coming up and talking about like your content, or, you know, they're responding to your email newsletter just with like, hey, really enjoyed this, you know, that kind of stuff. And you're starting to see some traffic. And then once you start to build those things, then you can start to think about, oh, okay, like we've got some traffic. Is this like, what kind of articles are converting? Like if our goal here is to get, say, leads or to signups, like are we seeing conversion, and what type of articles are we seeing conversion? You know, there's like, are we seeing like the types of people are coming to the website attracted by the content? Are they the right types of visitors? Because actually, like a big issue, I think early doors with a content program can be what I call the high school project problem, where basically, you know, you're doing kind of quite definitional basic content around the space you're in. But, you know, say if you're a fintech and you've got an article about like how to do a budget, like it's not finance leaders who are thinking of you buying your product who are Googling, you know, how to do a budget. They know how to do a budget. That's why they're a finance leader. But there is high school students or other people, you know, other people entering the profession maybe or whatever, you know. So, I think you need to be very careful early on. You know, you got to get to a point, and content does take about maybe like a couple of quarters to get there, where you actually have enough data to be, okay, like we can now start to really dig into this and figure out what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty hard to justify like the amount of content without having any of those leads. And I think I read somewhere that the content generation for Intercom generated close to 250,000 leads. Is that right for the business over the period of a number of years? Is that right?
Oh, totally. I mean, without getting too much into I mean, obviously it's pretty historic at this stage, but no, I mean, even I think like our big thing was getting email downloads. And actually the way we did that, the very successful tactic we had that was by producing books. And like, I think, you know, you'll notice also, I didn't say ebook. We call them books.
It's a physical book.
We did do a physical book, but actually even the ones that were digital, we just felt like the actual whole notion of an ebook was very demeaned, and like they're usually pretty light and like of lower quality. And like these were like, you know, these were like 40,000 word pieces. These were like, they had an ISSN number, you know, you could download them from Amazon. They were available in like multiple like digital formats, you know, not just a PDF. You could get them on your iPhone. Yeah. We just wanted to feel like a quality product, right? But yeah, the books alone, I mean, with our first book, Intercom on Product Management, has been downloaded over, like, certainly while I was there, over 100,000 times. And like literally it was, you know, it was being hosted on other people's websites. I mean, once a month, I'd kind of have to Google it and email people going, can you please take our intellectual property off your website? But that's always a good sign that people are doing that. Yeah. But yeah, I think like the books alone would have had over 250,000 downloads, which, you know, to sort of buy that level of, you know, investing in content certainly can seem a big expense up front, but like, compare that to how much you would have to pay in Google ads or, you know, Facebook ads to get those number of leads or those number of email. You know, and they are leads because they're not just an email address. They're someone who's actually shown an interest in your content.
Yeah. And I remember for listeners in Australia anyway, in particular, the wave of information coming from Dublin to Sydney at that stage was you're going to be doing a world tour. I think that's how it was branded. And I was like, Intercom are going to do a world tour. My God, like, you know, they are the rock stars at the moment coming out of Ireland, and they're actually going to do a world tour. What's going to be involved? And I remember I think Adrian Tan actually bought a bunch of tickets, who's a product management consultancy owner then in Sydney, who's a good friend of the podcast. And we all went to the world tour of Intercom in Sydney. Can you give us a little bit of background to that? Because, you know, it just seems like a kind of a leap for a business to start doing something like that. Like, where did this idea come from?
Yeah, well, I'd just like to say as an aside, Jerry, I'm sure your first reaction was not what you said and was probably like, pure notions on those lads.
Well, do you know what? I hovered over that conversation in my head. I was like, Shiny Mac, the pair of brass balls and these lads coming across and calling it a world tour.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, you know, the fact that even, you know, whatever, like 4 or 5 years later, we're still talking about it is testament to that. I mean, listen, you know, we all sort of felt like we wanted to do, like, quality content. We invested in content. We had a big content team at that stage. We had started to do events. You know, initially, like way back, we used to do just like small community events, which were basically just like meetups in bars. Yeah, but I mean, once we started to do professional events, like the team really empowered our Megan Sheridan, our head of events, just do really, really creative stuff. And so, you know, like we did the Mansion House, I think was one of our first events. And just to try and make it, like, you know, at the time, like, tech events were very associated with, you know, like, pizza. I'm going to go and some guy in a bad suit is going to present a bad PowerPoint in a, you know, suburban hotel somewhere, and you know, I'm going because it's like my boss asked me to go and attend this thing. But, you know, there's zero joy. And I think really what we wanted to do in many ways was kind of reflect the content we were publishing both on our blog and on our podcast and sort of do a live version of that. And, you know, I think, you know, as we talked through that, you know, probably Megan was like, we should do it, like, call it like a tour. And so it was really just like we literally looked in Intercom because Intercom used Intercom to run Intercom. Yeah. But we looked in Intercom and where are most of our customers? Like what are the top cities? And so we went to, you know, it was London, Berlin, Paris, you know, right across the US, Vancouver, Sydney, went to Toronto, you know, and so it was really just like, where are the companies that use us most? And let's actually go and visit them and try and deliver something of. Yeah, I know it's a bit of a cliche, but deliver something of value that's like not your normal, just sort of, you know, come and talk about us and tell you what's on the roadmap, but actually tell you share some of the stories and the vulnerabilities of like our own journey. Because like at that stage, particularly, you know, less so now, but like at that stage, particularly, Intercom was very much selling to startups.
Yeah.
So it made sense to sort of share our own journey. Yeah.
I remember at that stage, though, those events weren't free. And I remember that was kind of a little bit of a sort of a jolt. I was like, okay, there, you have to pay to go to these things. That's something that we discussed in the last time about always having something there where there's value being exchanged. How did you justify at that point having a ticket price for that? Whereas, say that the blog items and the podcasts, they're free as well, like, you know?
Yeah, well, I think there's a scarcity factor with a live event that there just isn't with a podcast or blog. And so it was literally like, if we put these things out there and make them for free, you know, we're going to get literally a 25% attendance rate. Like that's the industry average, right? You know, because people just go, oh, and then they go, oh, it's Wednesday and it's actually raining, so I'm going to go home from work. Or, you know, I had a bad day, I'm going to go home from work. Whereas actually, if you paid like $10, and I think that's probably about the average price wherever we went, it's just people go, oh, you know what, I paid for that thing, I'm gonna go. And it just made people think twice about it. It made people, like, obviously the expectation is higher in terms of what we delivered, but I think also, you know, people put, you know, it just created a buzz about it, you know, and it made sure that like the room was full. You know, people had paid $10 to be there, they were gonna turn up and they were going to be interested and they were going to be attentive.
Absolutely. Now, can you remember way back at that point when, you know, you got the promotion as the director of content? At that stage in Intercom, you were probably 4 years in or something like that, and they were 7 years into their journey. That would have been a pretty big sort of a hockey stick of gone through that pieces. What was the feeling around, because at that stage, the shift in how marketing was being perceived within the business was probably changing a little bit more, and you started to do, I guess, maybe talk to that a little bit more. Like, what was the shift like from the start to where you were at to be made director of content? What kind of stuff were you doing at that stage with the content strategy?
Yeah. Well, I think, the big thing was, well, it was a number of things. I think, like, we'd just gone into new channels and realized that actually, you know, much as I talked about the live events, you know, it's basically a live version of the content we were putting out, say, on the blog or the podcast. But really, it was just like trying to get into new channels and realize that actually you just need to give your customers and potential customers like choice of how they consume your content. Like, some people want to listen because they want to consume your content when they're at the gym or when they're driving a car. Other people want to read it at lunchtime at their desk, so you still continue to produce the podcast. But it was just like, or continue to produce the blog, but it was just, you know, move into new channels was a big thing for us, give people those options. Started to really sort of move down the funnel, as I say, in marketing and get closer to sales as well, and really thinking about like what's the content that we need to produce to help sales close deals. So whether that's like, hey, we've got like a two pager here on like, you know, Intercom security stance, or, you know, we've got like document, you know, case studies of how our customers have moved from other solutions, all that kind of stuff was a really big piece for us as well. But yeah, it was, I mean, obviously, and the metrics, you know, I obviously talked about at the start, you know, it's kind of like you should be able to just see it, you know, you don't have to do a huge amount of dashboarding or engineering to figure out it's working. But like, certainly the metrics were very different at that stage, and it was very much around, you know, leads. You know, obviously people felt like content really helped build the brand, but it was, you know, that quite often can be a bit of a fig leaf in marketing. It's like, oh, this is great for the brand, but like, what's it actually delivering for the business? And so I think there was definitely a case where we were carrying a lead number, you know, we were actually saying, okay, this is how many leads we're going to bring in this quarter. So yeah, I mean, we had a much bigger team. It was a much bigger investment at that stage. And it was interesting as well. Like, we had content, like we then had obviously content designers on the product side as well, that we were, you know, in a separate org, but like trying to figure out how to make content work throughout the journey, you know, so that, as you said, you know, you didn't have that sort of pre, you know, before you buy and after you buy, and a disconnect between the two, which often we see in a lot of products.
So for people listening here, like they may not have a decent understanding of the different types of marketing and the different marketing functions. You talk about content marketing. How does that differ really to product marketing in your world? Because from my understanding of working with and speaking to other people in the content design space, especially John Coleman, who was there at Intercom, they may have been mainly working on the product side of things. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, certainly at Intercom, the way it worked was like content design sat in the product org. But on the marketing side, product marketing, generally, like product marketing is where you think about like you know, well, I suppose the output is what is the positioning? Like, how are you going to actually talk about this product? Who is the target market? Like, what is your ideal customer profile? What are the key messages that we have about this product? And so, like, content marketing, you know, comms, paid advertising, like whatever it might be, these are channels that then kind of sit on top of product marketing and pump the correct, you know, figure out, okay, like if we're trying to reach, you know, service designers in the financial service industry, well, like if that's our target market, if that's our ICP, our ideal customer profile, well, how do we reach them with content? What's the voice and tone of the content if we're writing for those kind of people? Like, where do they currently sort of read and stuff? So I think that's how I very much think of like product marketing, is that sort of foundational stuff. And I think, you know, very much in the startup world, I always say to people, like, get product marketing first, particularly if you're in the sort of like B2B space that I've mostly worked in. It's essential just to figure out, because I can create content for any business and sort of like make my best stab at it. But if you haven't done that foundational work of thinking about like, what does the market want? You know, who are the people, who are the buyers in the market? All that stuff that product marketing does. And product marketing kind of sits at that intersection between, you know, sales, product, and marketing. And obviously represents the customer and what they see out in the market as well. So it's a really foundational role. And as I say, the kind of then you layer on, like at Intercom, we had product marketing, content marketing, demand generation, which included all the paid advertising, and then brand marketing, as we call it. And it was great that, like, you know, because in a lot of places, content marketing would potentially sit under product marketing or potentially sit under demand generation. But I think, you know, that was why I think content was so successful, was that we had that equal sort of billing at the head table of marketing, you know?
Yeah. I think my understanding of the content marketing space, and you can tell me to sit back down, Jerry, is there's a correlation between like paid advertising and paid spend and all that kind of stuff, and Google Ads and so forth. Mm-hmm. Was there a correlation between the cost for content marketing and reducing the focus for the kind of the paid ad? Does that make sense? Like,
No, absolutely. Like, totally. I mean, you should, you know, in the early days, and I think, you know, it's happening less now because obviously the way online advertising space has changed, and particularly with Apple's recent, you know, rule changes last year, which mean it's harder to do targeted advertising. But but people do generally turn on paid advertising first if they're trying to like generate inbound interest.
Get eyeballs.
Exactly. But I mean, over time, absolutely, your organic, as it's known, your non-paid sources should be like 70-80% of your business, and that takes time though to build that. But I mean, that's ideally in the B2B world what you want to get to. You shouldn't have to be, you know, you shouldn't technically have to be paying for traffic for sort of your core product features or anything like that, or particularly anything branded where people are like, you know, searching for your company name and this kind of product or service you offer.
Yeah.
So totally, you know, we never didn't quite get down to the point where we were analyzing, you know, cost per lead or like at the content level. I mean, obviously we were at a company level or, you know, marketing department level, yeah, I mean, the cost per lead is significantly less for organic than it is for paid generally if you're doing it properly.
Yeah, and the signal to noise ratio tends to be a little bit better as well through, in my experience anyway, with content marketing versus paid. So can you speak to that a bit more around the conversion rates? Like, were you seeing a higher conversion rate through content marketing versus paid marketing?
So conversion, it's interesting. Conversion rates were not quite as good as for paid, because obviously you think about it, like paid can be very targeted and someone's clicked on an ad, so the intent is quite high at that point. Whereas actually the intent, you know, I might download your piece of content, and I'm definitely sort of bought into your philosophical approach, but I mightn't be as sort of primed to buy at that point.
Yeah.
But what we did see with content marketing was a huge difference was that basically those customers hung around a lot longer and spent a lot more with us. So the lifetime value of those customers that came through content was way, way higher.
Wow.
than from paid. So, because if you think about it, generally paid, you might be running a paid campaign that like talks about how you're, you know, cheaper than your competitors, or you've got, you know, certain features that your competitors don't have. But, you know, the competitor might get that feature, you know, and particularly depending on the nature of your product and how easy it is to switch or change, you know, those customers can move. I think the reason that the content was so successful in sort of getting these like deeper customer relationships and these customers that hung around for longer and spent more was because, like, particularly at Intercom, the content we produced, we were really priming them for like the way that the product worked, you know?
Yeah.
It was like, hey, you know, you actually believe that customer relationships are something worth investing in. Intercom, the tool will help you to have those better customer
Absolutely.
Relationships. And so, you know, there was a connect there, yeah.
Yeah, I'd go so far and say if this didn't happen, like if the content marketing function wasn't as good as it was way back, and this is not me kind of blowing smoke, It really changed how I thought of the business, because I wasn't in Ireland. I wasn't around. I was in a completely different territory. I was watching it from afar. And the only way of interacting was through the blog and through the podcast at that stage. And it really led me to believe that the product was going to be sensational. Like, you know, and, you know, it's grown, and it's obviously a massive success story. So without that piece, it just would have been another tech business, really, like a SaaS business that was trying to sell, whereas this is a really nice and passive way of doing it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you for that. Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely helped us punch above our weight. Like, there's no doubt. And I think you know, it's funny because, like, I get people, you know, or I hear people talking about, oh, like, we want to do what Intercom did with our content. And I'm like, well, you know, it's not like a formula that you can just recreate elsewhere. I mean, it was at a particular time. It was a particular market we were going after, like, that we chose to do the things we did. It's not that it's a playbook for, like, you know, if you're a B2B software company, just do these things and it'll work.
Mm.
So, for instance, like, we wanted to stand out. Like, there was people like HubSpot and Buffer, who were a social media tool. You know, they're probably the two most high profile examples at the time when I joined, of like people who were doing like high volumes of SEO content. And like, we were like, okay, you know, we can't compete with them. And like, you know, HubSpot in particular were like better funded and bigger than us at the time. It was like, what are we going to do that's going to stand out? Like, how are we going to create something that's unique? And also, I think it was the nature of who we were selling to. Like, you know, we were selling to relatively early stage startups. It was like founders, it was like product managers, it was designers in those companies, because they were the people who were deciding, oh, let's put Intercom into, like, let's build, like, integrate Intercom into our product. And so, again, you know, I think that kind of audience, they were quite willing to, but they were only going to interact with high quality content.
Yeah.
They weren't going to read the very sort of like SEO driven kind of very like tick the box type content. They wanted to hear opinions from like our product team and opinions from our designers.
Absolutely.
And, you know, our take on the world.
I think that's the big point. I think it's, you know, it wasn't created by marketing for marketing people. It was created by, you know, the top talent in Intercom for the top talent in the businesses who were the person that was going to influence the sale process within their business.
Yeah, absolutely.
So like the Paul Adam post that I mentioned to you ages ago, like, what was it called? It was a funny one. The dribbleization of design, right? I remember being in a bank in Sydney, and that being sent around through Slack, and maybe it wasn't Slack back in that time. But I remember kind of going, oh my God, they're an Irish business, and feeling a sense of pride. That's the ironic thing. I was like, yeah, they're Irish, and feeling that there's something happening at home was hugely positive as an expat as well. But I think that's the main point. Now, I know you've obviously exited Intercom a couple of years ago, and you've been working on other stuff, and you're an independent consultant at the moment. Maybe you can talk to a little bit of your key learnings that you took from the Intercom role, and then you're working for Ramp as well. If you had to do a kind of a top, say, five things that you learned in terms of the growth period in Intercom, what would they be in terms of advice for startups who are going through that journey now and maybe want to invest more into content marketing?
I think the big thing for me was it sounds a bit corny, but like really fall in love with the customer.
Fall in love with the customer. Like
but just really like understand, in the first year at Intercom, any opportunity to go to like a meetup or a conference or whatever, I have to apologize if anyone like interacted with me at that stage, but you know, I was on the stand at like things like Web Summit and stuff, you know, actually trying to, you know, help sell Intercom, because it was just like you need to eyeball the people and really understand who are your potential customers, like how do they talk about your solution, how do they like, what kind of, what do they read, what do they drink, what kind of coffee do they like, you know, how do they dress, you know, because these are all things that just really, really help you like create something that's going to resonate with with them, and like whether that's help them resonate on the product side or the marketing side or whatever it might be, you know, because even I think things like, you know, Intercom was one of the first sort of business products to introduce emoji and support emoji.
Yeah.
And at the time, I remember people were quite like, oh, this is kid stuff. And it's like, she's got, you know, now you're kind of start using a business product and it doesn't support emoji. You're like, what the hell is wrong here? You know, like and I think that came from just having that, like, you know, Paul Adams, who you mentioned that VP of product or chief product officer, I believe he is now. You know, he very much talks about this idea of falling in love with the problem and really deeply understanding the problem that your customers are trying to solve rather than like rushing to like, what's the solution and what can we create for them, you know?
So number one is falling in love with the customer.
That's right. Yeah. Number two, growth is amazing, but it's a double-edged sword. A lot of everyone wants growth. I get it, but you know, it can be tough in an organization. And so I think, you know, just getting a lot of the fundamentals in place, such as your company values and like what you believe in, like sometimes people think that stuff's a bit fluffy, but really, really helps you when you grow rapidly, is like understanding why does your company exist other than to make money.
Yeah.
And I think so getting your values nailed will be
number two.
Number three, hire a good marketing leader as early as you can. Oh my god, every company I've worked for, it's like, I don't know, I think marketing's just got so broad these days that like it's very hard for like one like CMO to be across everything well. But like, I don't think I've worked under a marketing leader for more than about maybe like, 20 months maybe.
Really?
The longest that like any tenure of any leader I've had. And I think, I think it's just a tough one. I think like it's
so broad.
You know, try and hire someone early though that can grow with the business, you know. It is hard. It's hard to hire good marketers. Yeah. I get it, but if you get it right, it's massive.
That's number three. So we've got two more. I should do a drum roll here.
Two more. Gosh, you put me on
the
spot.
No, it's good. It's good. Just get off the top of your head. Like, you know, what are the things? Because there's be people listening to this who are in startups and who are maybe in the early stage, and they could be designers. And they're saying, okay, well, we do have these things in place, like, you know. What about the problems that were faced? You know, what are the learnings maybe that in that growth period, what are the things that you wish you'd done better or wish that you're glad that you did?
Document everything. Again, you know, you're moving fast. You know, the tendency is not to document things. It was quite interesting actually, hopefully not talking out of school, but you know, different parts of say Intercom as it got bigger kind of, you know, had maybe different sort of processes and traditions, and it was quite interesting that like on the sales team in particular, because it was, you know, initially largely based in San Francisco versus the product team, who was mostly based in Dublin. Like, the product team was a written culture. Everything was like, let's create a Google Doc. We're going to go in here. People will like comment in detail. It'll be a whole back and forth. And like, you know, at the end of it, like, we've got like our roadmap or whatever the, you know, whatever where this document is being created to solve. Whereas sales was very much about like, you know, get, you know, it was an oral culture, and it was like, get everyone in a room and we'll figure this out, and we'll like, you know, we'll figure out what the best solution for everyone is. But, you know, maybe then obviously, you know, there'll be some documentation, obviously, what decisions were made, but you didn't have that really rich ability to look back. And I actually think, you know, while I get it, while it works on the sales side, I definitely think, like, you know, for marketers in particular, like, there's a tendency sometimes not to document and not to design processes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that again can really, really kill you as you grow. So, you know, I've definitely learned my lesson from that.
That's a good one.
And really make sure, try and document stuff. And I think the last one was just like, don't compromise on hiring. You know, sometimes again, hopefully this is changing, because it's terrible to see people losing their jobs. But, you know, with big tech firms cutting back so much, I think it is going to be easier for startups to hire. But, you know, I know in the past it was very hard for startups to hire, and they were competing with the big tech companies, which looked very, very attractive for people. And so people would compromise. Sometimes they go, oh, well, this person, you know, they don't tick all the boxes, but we think they're okay. And, you know, when you make a bad hire, it just sets you back so much further than like if you hadn't hired anyone at all. Because it is just so disruptive to bring someone in for like 3 months or 6 months or whatever it takes, however long it takes. It's kind of soul destroying to you as well to have to, you know, let someone go. And, you know, unfortunately, it's a reality of startups that you will have to let some people go. Because not everyone's going to work out. But I mean, I think as much as you can, don't compromise in terms of like who you hire, because it'll just make things so much easier if you've got people in situ.
Yeah, there. I know you said you put yourself on the spot there. I put you on the spot, should I say? But they're actually very, very solid five points that you just made. John, I know, as I mentioned there, you're working independently now. You're working with a number of businesses. If people are listening to this podcast and they want to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
You will find me on probably a LinkedIn is probably easy. I am currently a bit like the mechanic and the car. You know, I don't have a website as we speak right now, but I am working on it. So johncollins.cc will be a good place to check out and just get an overview of what I do.
I'll throw a link to that in the show notes, John. But again, listen, look, thanks so much for talking about your time, you know, at Intercom, and just generally in your experience as a leading content marketer. And thanks for your openness as well.
Great to chat, Jerry. Yeah, no, it was great to chat. And thanks for having me on.
There you go, folks. I hope you enjoyed that episode. And if you enjoyed it and want to listen to more, why not visit thisishcd.com, where you can learn more about what we're up to and also explore our courses whilst you're there. Thanks again for listening.